Welcome to Elite Achievement, a podcast for financial advisors and leaders in financial services who are building and scaling firms. I'm Kristen Burke. Let's start here. As firms grow, leaders often find themselves navigating decisions about how the firm is structured. Making the decision to restructure a firm isn't easy because it can mean changing team members' roles, creating a different client experience, and leading people through change while preserving a culture that made the firm successful in the first place. In today's conversation, I'm joined by Mary Becker, Chief Operating Officer of MHF Wealth Partners. MHF is currently in the middle of redesigning how the firm is structured to support its future. Mary shares what prompted the change, how the firm has approached leading its team through the transition, and how they're working to preserve the culture that has been central to MHF's success. Mary, I'm looking forward to today's conversation. For our listeners who may not be familiar with MHF Wealth Partners, tell us a little bit about the firm and your role as the COO.
Well, thank you so much, Kristen. It's a pleasure to be here and happy to tell you about our firm. We are affiliated with Northwestern Mutual. We're a comprehensive wealth management planning firm. We specialize in retirement distribution planning. So, you know, as clients accumulate money, we're really good at helping them actually enjoy their retirement and spend money. Our firm is located just outside of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We have 30 people on our team, 4 partners, 26 employees. And my role is Chief Operating Officer, and I mainly do strategic planning. I manage the operations. It's a smaller business, so you get what comes along, you end up working through. So I'm kind of the HR department, and I'm responsible for staffing and like fun projects that come along. For example, 2 years ago, we needed a new office. We had outgrown our space, and I got to lead the effort to pick out a new spot. And then we built up something that a complete rebuild of a new space. So we got to pick out the standing desks and, you know, do the artwork and the chair covers and all the fun stuff. So that's just another example of creative things I get to do in my role. I really love my job.
Yeah. Who knew you would become an interior designer along the way?
And I had some, I'm not going to take full credit for that, but it is fun to see, you know, to create something new. So yeah, exactly.
That's great. Well, with 30 team members, one of the things I want to learn a little bit more about is the culture at MHF and how the firm treats its team members. So how would you describe the culture at MHF Wealth Partners and what makes it so special and unique?
Yeah, thank you. I love answering this question because I think it is really something special about our firm. Our firm is successful because of our culture. It's one of the main reasons. And because the firm starts with the employees. The employees are a key priority, and the partners, we have amazing partners that are extremely talented at what they do. But at the end of the day, they're kind and they're generous. So, and genuine. They really think about what matters to the employees and how the employees feel, creating an inclusive environment that then transforms into the way we treat our clients. So it's really a fun topic.
What are some of the things that you and the partners have done to create that inclusive environment?
Well, what's interesting is I think we do a lot of little things, but they all make a difference, right? So our onboarding, when we bring a new employee on board, is top notch. We've got an employee it's her specific job, and she's really kind of taken this under her wing to make it the best possible onboarding process that we have, so that when you show up, your equipment is ready to go. Your desk, we have a favorite things that we send out. So we ask new employees, everyone has their favorite things document. So we also have a culture of recognition. And that way, when we are going to give you a gift or a gift card or a little treat on your desk, we're actually giving you the Sour Patch Kids versus the peanut butter cups that you're allergic to or whatever, right? So we ask these questions. So when a new employee shows up to their desk, they've got their favorite treats on their desk, their computer is running, and they have a whole schedule of who they're going to be meeting with. So each new employee meets with each existing employee for at least 30 minutes to learn about what their job is and a little bit about them. So I feel like that's one example of something that we do. Another example is this culture of recognition. Like I mentioned, the favorite things list. Behind me is a recognition bin that has candies and treats and note cards and gift cards. And the idea of that is to make it easy for employees to recognize each other. I mean, I can recognize someone, but it means so much more when it comes from a peer. Like, oh, if they backed me up when I was on vacation, I'm gonna drop them a little note and give them a gift card or leave them a box of candy. So those are just a couple small examples, but it makes a lot of difference.
What inspired you to create this culture of recognition? Was there a specific event? Was it a problem you had to solve? Like, how did this come about? Because it sounds so simple, but it sounds like it makes a massive difference.
Yeah. No, I can't take credit for that per se. So our partner, Hans-Michael Bust, has been here since the beginning. He had a small team and he had somebody on his team who's since retired, but they were very driven by recognition and writing little notes. And I think it was just kind of the culture. I came along and I could see it and I'm like, wow, this is great. How can we keep maintaining this so that people feel good about it? COVID was interesting because we were all separated, right? And we did this project, it's called the Gratitude Project, where I mailed out everybody notes, stamps, addresses, and gift cards, and then had them pick three employees to mail, you know, like we couldn't do it physically, but we could do it through the mail. So we did that. You're right. I don't know. You know, it kind of started with someone and then the rest of us kind of took hold with it. And because everyone on our team is so kind, they really appreciate each other. And it's easy to give recognition when people are always wanting to help. Right. So I think maybe it's a combination of supporting the program and the people that are here that are inclined to say, you know, take a minute to recognize someone, which, as you probably know, right, when you get it's a win-win because the person feels good, but you almost feel better when you're the one that's, you know, saying something, writing a note or giving somebody something. It makes your day when you do that. It really does.
That's such a great point. It is a win-win and it feels so fulfilling. Yet as financial advisor firms are growing and scaling, everyone can get too busy. This almost feels like it's one of the things that we can get too busy to do. So how do you make sure you keep this up despite all the other projects or initiatives you have going on?
Right. It's really tricky. I do think it stems back to you've got to have the right people. You've got to have the right people. And we are very purposeful about who we allow on our team. We actually engage the team. So we leverage Claire Myers Recruiting, who you have had on this podcast, who it's a wonderful firm, and Carrie Anderhold is our recruiter that we've worked with, and we love her, and she knows our team, and she actually talks about how great we are, which is wonderful. So we leverage partners to help us find people that they think would fit. Then we go through a process of like myself and another leader, you know, meeting with somebody on a Zoom call, and if we think that we are interested in them, we invite them into our office for a 2-hour program of meeting with the team. So we essentially let the team interview candidates. And it's the candidate gets to learn, you know, see our work environment and meet the people that they're working with. And the same for the team. They're like, oh, would this person fit in? Because cultural fit is probably our number one. You know, you have to have the skills, and that's what the recruiting firm helps us make sure. But then are they going to be a good fit for the team? And I've been overridden a couple times when I've, you know, suggested, I think we should hire them. What do you think? And the team said, we don't think they'd be a perfect fit. And so I said, okay, no job. So I think that works really well for us. It's an event when we're hiring someone.
Well, it's certainly different when you invite someone to meet the team. Mary, what were some of the systems or processes you had to put in place to let go of that control, if you will, and give that over to your team to be able to hire and make that decision?
Well, I think, you know, there is, to be fair, there's a little bit of a pre-operation with the recruiters and the resume and a lot of that vetting that happens. So if you know someone's qualified, there's a level of control that you have relative to that. You know, we're in the financial services industry. People need to be licensed and have good experience. And we also check references. So we do a lot of other things aside from that. But because culture is so important, you trust, right? That's what makes a good culture. And that's what makes a good team, is that you just have to have trust. And it is helpful when it's more than one person, right? So it's a team. We meet in small groups, and then we have a debrief at the end. So it's, you know, people can share what they think and why they thought that. And so that's been kind of fun.
And I bet that also increases ownership from your team members as well. They probably right. really feel bought in when they get to yeah. have that level of say in who's joining the team.
Yes, we do find that, you know, there's lots of hugging on first days because we're like excited to see the person again. So that's fun. Like you feel like you get to know them a little bit. And we do get good feedback from candidates. Like you can, I'm like, oh, I can, they want to work here, right? Which makes you feel good. It's a little hard if you don't end up selecting the person, but it feels good to have people want to be part of the culture that you've created.
And you mentioned everyone in the firm is kind. Is that one of the values of the firm, or why is kindness? I mean, I think we obviously know why kindness is so important, but yeah. I haven't come across a lot of firms that have such a significance around a kindness.
Yeah. Thank you for teeing that up. We have these, and you can't see this because this is a podcast, but we have, everyone has a little thing at their desk that highlights our values that we've decided on as a team. And kindness is the one that's on the top. We also, we have integrity, resourcefulness, excellence, accountability. So a couple other key important things. But kindness does rise to the top, kindness to each other, and then kindness to our clients. We are in wealth management and planning, and the crux of that is insurance and meeting people's needs and providing them financial security. And there can be some tough spots. A loved one can pass away. They can retire. And what's interesting is when people retire, they sometimes have trouble, actually a lot of times have trouble spending their money because the money isn't coming in anymore, but now they need to spend the money. So it's just kind of this, there's a psychological element to that. And I think we know this and we're successful as a firm because we have experience with it. And kindness just fits in there so well because people are going through transitions, and it's just a strong element that is there a t-shirt that says, if you're going to be anything, be kind, or I feel like that's
maybe a bumper sticker,
a t-shirt. Yes.
Yeah. How do you look for kindness in candidates when they're joining the team?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I think you can, there isn't necessarily kindness questions that
wondering.
That's an insightful question. I think it's just watching how they interact with other people, like from coming in the front door to, you know, just, you know, manners and interpersonal interaction is one thing. What people like doing for fun and what they do outside of work is sometimes a good, you know, somebody will say, clients said, oh, after this, I'm going to take my grandmother out to lunch or something, you know, things like that. So it's kind of inherent questions that you can sometimes ask that pick up on it. It is, yeah, I don't know that there's any magic answer to that, but it's important.
Yeah, it's just taking a look at things other than exactly how a candidate answers a question is what I'm hearing you say.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I know that MHF is currently in the process of redesigning how the mm-hmm. firm is structured. Mm-hmm. What led the firm to make that decision?
Yeah. So it all ties back to priorities, right? So as a firm, we had a couple priorities that we're focused on. One of them is growth. Continued growth. Another big priority is transitioning clients. So one of our partners is in the process of beginning to phase out and retire. So as part of that, we want to transition this individual's clients who's been here for quite some, you know, he's a founding partner. He's been here for quite some time and working with these clients for a long time. We want to have a very successful transition of those clients to other partners. Which gets to the kind of the third priority, which is a consistent experience because of that second priority, right? So that led us to why we need to reorganize. We need to have a structure that's going to be able to sustain the growth because our firm grows significantly every year, and a way for clients to feel like they're at one firm, and with whichever partner they're working with, it feels like it's the same experience. It doesn't, you know, I'm used to seeing this type of document, or this is the way my appointments are scheduled, and this is how the meeting might run. You know, we have an office in a different suburb. They prefer that location. Now I have to come to this location. You know, just things like that. That was what drove us to say, what's the right organizational structure that we're going to need to be successful going forward?
Yeah. And how did you decide? I mean, that's a big question to answer.
It is a
big
question.
What is the right org structure?
So Northwestern Mutual has a lot of connections and a lot. We leverage each other for resources or ideas. And we learned from a consulting partner that we work with, Brandon O'Dell at the Ensemble practice. He recommended Ironworks to us. And I know Heidi has been a guest on here. I got to listen to her. She's lovely. And Jana, we worked with pretty closely. So that felt really good because one of the criteria was, have you been through this before? What do you know about Northwestern Mutual? And they had both been at Northwestern Mutual, right? So they really understood how our business worked and then had gotten into the consulting of helping firms actually reorganize and work through things. So that was a huge comfort for us. And I feel like a really good decision that we made to leverage them. And they proposed like these, this is what a lot of firms your size, this is kind of the structure that they're moving towards. It doesn't have to, and then you have to adapt it for what's going to work for your firm, right? So it's not exactly, you know, nothing is exactly the same. But that was an excellent starting point. And it always makes you feel good to know other firms that are your size or bigger are finding this to be very beneficial. So that was kind of the path that we got led down.
Yeah, I love how you found these consulting organizations through referrals and the connections. Mm-hmm. And we have so many connections with the past podcast guest and
right.
Claire and Heidi.
Yeah.
And so referrals, we know advisors grow their client base through referrals, but it can also help as they are building and scaling businesses. So Mary, can you tell us a little bit about some of the changes that you had to make for this redesign?
Yeah, that's a really good question, is just sort of rethinking what is our model going to look like, and trying to keep the things that you're really good at intact, right? And how does that work? How is it going to feel for the client? And really trying to, one of the things we had noticed with our current organization was that it was kind of three different practices. Or four different practices, four partners, four practices, right? Which in each partner had a team and everybody in the specific roles, which was fabulous. And there wasn't anything broken per se, but what we needed to get to was one firm and create some scalability too, because you can't keep hiring one new person for each role and for each, you know, like that just isn't a sustainable way to run a business. So that was something that we thought through in terms of creating different teams that had different functions and isolating a little bit the client interaction. So creating roles that these are the key people that will communicate with the client, and the client can have kind of a one-stop. This is your relationship manager. This is the person you call versus this is the person you call for insurance. This is the person you call for investments. This is the you know, just trying to make it easier for the client. So that was kind of some core ideas we wanted to make sure we were incorporating as we thought about the new structure.
Well, knowing that you had four partners coming together, and I'm sure, right, they were really proud of what they had built and their way was the best way. How did you get four partners to agree on one way? Was there a lot of debate? Was there a lot of dialogue? Or again, was it the value of kindness that rose to the top and it was easier than I think it might be?
I think the getting everybody to agree and see the future of the potential of where we could go was one thing. Everyone was in agreement that everyone was in agreement on the why, right? You have to understand the why. The other thing is everyone felt good about the fact that we were relying on consultants that had been recommended from a consultant that, you know, other successful firms, and there's some leadership programs at the home office that talk about firm structure. So it was not this concept of what they were proposing was not new necessarily. So that was a little bit more of the easy part of everyone saying, yes, this seems to make sense. We agree. This is what we should do. The actual doing of it when you have to change and alter things, we're still in the middle of that, and it's going well. It's not perfect, and you know, everybody has to learn a little bit of a different way for different things, but we're trying to take the best way and help people understand why, and really important is listen to the team. So the partners have one part, but the team plays such a key role in putting things together so that the advisors can meet with clients. We need to have their input on what's working and what's not working or what's the best way, and then throw in AI, and that's a whole nother, you know, topic of conversation. So we got agreement and that was good, but it's just the actual doing of it is a little more challenging.
It sounds like you're in the messy middle, right?
But yeah, we're a little bit in the messy middle, coming over the edge, maybe. Yeah.
Well, I love how you reminded us again the importance of why. That's true for all of us. And no matter what goals we're going after, or how we want to scale the firm, or the leadership we're striving for, the why is so key and fundamental. And Mary, I want to go back a second because I heard you mention that we had to create roles. And so I'm thinking that individuals' roles started to be a shift and change on the team. How did you lead those team members through their role actually changing?
Yeah. So what I feel really good about is that we started communication on this very early to say, we're going to need to be adjusting our organizational structure. That it is intended to support growth. It is not, we will be hiring more people. It is not intended to eliminate jobs or which is really the truth. And so it was very easy to deliver that message. But sometimes that's where employees' heads go, oh, there's going to be a reorganization. This was just a change in structure to support growth. And then we would be hiring for new roles, right? So we just started talking about that, and why we needed to change. Like, these are our priorities. This is why we need to change. The change is coming. We've hired a consultant group and we'll keep you informed. And then we'll be asking for your input. So we started really early with sharing that messaging, which felt really good, because versus the converse of that, which would be just holding a big meeting and saying, here's the new structure and here's all the roles. So because we had talked about it, then we could start saying, all right, this is the way this is looking. And some roles stayed the same. It created new leadership opportunities for some people, which was fabulous. It created a marketing role for someone who was really wanted to have a marketing role and not be doing other things. So there were a lot of wins with it. Then there's also people who like certain parts of their, you know, like the diversity of their job, and some of that changed slightly. So it's not perfect, but we tried to really communicate and say, we're going to be recommending this structure. The partners have made that decision, but how it all works and exactly how it goes, we're going to be working through all of that together as a team.
Yeah. Sounds like clear communication played a huge role. And then
it really did.
Mary, you mentioned that you've kept the team informed along the way. How have you been keeping the team informed of these key decisions and the changes?
Kind of varying methods. And one thing that we have that I think has worked really well is our CEO and partner, and actually the one who's going to be phasing into retirement, has been sort of like the sponsor of this. Like you have a project sponsor. So he's been responsible for it. There's a lot of trust with him. Not that there isn't with the other partners, but he has been leading the messaging and talking to the team about why we're doing what we're doing. So there's messaging at the big team level, but then there's also messaging at smaller group levels. Like, okay, this relationship manager, this is the group of you that are going to be doing this role. Let's meet with you. What questions do you have? You know, so kind of breaking that the meetings and the discussions down to the team role level, and then breaking them down further to talking with the manager, leader, kind of one-on-one. How are you feeling about this? What do you think? What's going well? What could be better?
Yeah, that's great.
So working through it that way, I think, has helped people digest and ask questions and voice concerns. And we can get a feel for it, because, you know, until you're right in the middle of it, you don't exactly know. You can think this is all going to be, you know, just perfect and exactly right. But not until you're actually trying to execute on it, do you realize, okay, we're going to need to make some tweaks here or there. So
what do you think has surprised you the most as you're in the middle of this change?
So change can be hard for everyone, right? What I think has been surprising for us is you know your team, right? And you have an idea of who you think, oh, that's maybe a person who might struggle or have a little bit of a harder time with this change versus, oh, that person will, you know, get it. You kind of, what we sort of found was it wasn't necessarily what we thought. So different people had different struggles for different reasons, or other people didn't have a struggle with anything at all. And so it wasn't, you know, change can just impact everybody a little bit differently. And the thing you need to be aware of is you just always have to be watching and be checking in and asking people how they're doing. Change is extra. And so if somebody's having something that's going on personally outside of life, that makes it hard too, right? So you've got something else that you're dealing with, and now your job is changing when it used to be this way. So just navigating a few of those things has been interesting.
Do you have any tips for someone who might be navigating, leading employees and team members through change?
A couple of them. One is, I think, communication. And I think what we did, we communicated well, but I think we also started the change before something was really broken. And so when you do that, when something's broken, then that creates a sense of urgency, right? Then you've got to quickly fix things, and you don't have the luxury of talking about it, getting input, making adjustments. We've rolled out this change in phases. So we started with a couple things, and then, you know, the way we prep for meetings, you know, that was more complicated. We waited on that, or there's a few things that so being able to start as soon as you can and be able to start talking about it as soon as you can, I think is one huge piece of advice that I would offer. The other one is leverage some experts. Leveraging a consulting firm like Ironworks, like we did, really helped us spend, you know, kind of cut to the, this is what we should be doing and how are we going to do it, versus spending a lot of time figuring out what we should be doing.
I love how you pointed out when something is broken, it creates a sense of urgency. And so even mm-hmm. though change can feel intimidating and it's a lot of unknown, you get luxury, as you had mentioned, of phasing the change, like doing it in phases, and you get the luxury of seeking input if yep. you're willing to take that risk and do it sooner than when yep. you need it.
You get the luxury of saying, okay, that's feeling really uncomfortable for everybody right now. We're just going to hold on that, because, you know, the world's not going to end if we don't, you know, we can be flexible with our timeline, and we can work through and have a few more conversations about it. So I think that is, it's hard. It is hard to start something when you're humming along just fine. But it's worth it. If you're really thinking about the future, the time is now, not later.
Well, Mary, thank you so much for the conversation today.
My pleasure. It's been fun. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about the team. It's been really fun.
If people want to learn more about MHF Wealth Partners, where can they go to learn more about the firm?
You can click on our website, mhf.nm.com. And, you know, I'm always willing, open. You can find my contact information, email on that, on our website as well. Happy to answer any questions if people have them.
Thanks so much, Mary, for that offer. And to those of you listening, what are you taking away from today's conversation? I appreciate you listening and investing the time to grow as a leader. Follow Elite Achievement for more conversations on leadership and building a firm.